Welcome to the Bitcoin Infinity Academy, brought to you by Plan B Network and Bitbox. This is our course on Sovereignty Through Mathematics, my first book, and we're already at the last chapter called The Years Ahead. I'm Knut Svanholm, and I'm here as always with Luke DeWolf. Good morning, Luke. How are you today?
Good morning, Knut. I'm doing great. Our days are packed these days. We have such an awesome summer coming up, but I wouldn't miss covering the last chapter of Sovereignty Through Mathematics today. I'm really excited about this one. It's called The Years Ahead.
Yes, we'll see if there's some foreshadowing in this one.
I think there will be. So I think before we dive in, just quickly we'll remind everyone that the best way to get involved with the Academy is to go to our Geyser page and join the Academy whatever way you like. We give you access to our private discussion groups on the course, a bunch of other great perks, especially in our Mithril Adamantium membership, where you get a pack of all of Knut's books, including the recently released Praxeology. And we're covering all of the courses, all of the books in courses for the Academy here. So we're really looking forward to that. Again, that's geyser.fund/project/infinity. And it's the best way to support us and to get involved.
Yeah, and the Academy is growing, and it's growing fast, and it's going to grow during these conferences. We're going to cram as many people as, or as many plebs as we can into these groups, and we're going to have a lot of fun. It's a great forum for real Bitcoiners that accept no shitcoinery. These are some of the groups you should be in, so go ahead.
Absolutely. And with that, I think we can get started.
Absolutely.
The Years Ahead. The Lindy effect is a theory that describes the future life expectancy of a technology or an idea. It states that an idea's expected remaining lifespan is proportional to its current age, so that every additional period of survival implies a longer remaining life expectancy. Bitcoin, which is not only an idea, but also a technology and a social experiment, is 10 years old now, and therefore we can expect it to stay around for at least another 10. At the time of writing, there are exactly 17,669,941 Bitcoins around, and 12.5 new ones are created every 10 minutes. 17,669,941 is about 84% of the total supply. That is, the total amount of Bitcoin that will ever exist. 10 years from now, around 20 million Bitcoin will have been found. 3 more block reward halvings will have taken place, and the reward for each block found will be 1.5625 Bitcoin. The whole world will have a little more than 2.5 million new Bitcoin around. This is to be compared with the more than 17.5 million that were created during the last 10 years when they were cheap and relatively easy to come by. In a network's first couple of years, you could acquire several Bitcoin by just claiming them from special websites called faucets every once in a while. The US dollar's cumulative rate of inflation was 15.6% during this period. This means that each dollar lost more than 1/6 of its value in the last 10 years due to quantitative easing, which is the central banker's term for counterfeiting. It is very unlikely that the cumulative rate of inflation for the US dollar in the upcoming 10 years will be any lower than these 15.6%. since the fractional reserve lending system requires a little more inflation each year to sustain itself. So, a little less than 2.5 million new Bitcoin to share, and at least 20% more US dollars in circulation to buy them with. I'll stop here. I think the whole chapter kind of flows into each other a little bit, but we've got quite a bit to talk about now, and obviously, at the time of writing implies that these details are what were the case exactly when this was written. And things have changed now, of course, but it's a good place to understand where we were. So what are your thoughts about this, Knut?
Yes, I think these numbers are from somewhere around May 2019, maybe even April 2019. And we're now at what? June 2025. So more than 6 years later. Right now, 94.64% of all Bitcoins have been mined. That is, let's crunch some numbers here, shall we? The total supply of Bitcoins that have been mined already is 19,874,209.38. So, meaning that there's just slightly above 5% left of them, which means these last 5% will be mined during the next 100 years. So this, this is what just crunching the numbers is so mind-blowing. Another fact here is that during COVID, which no one could predict here in 2019, really, and the lockdowns, 21 million Bitcoin were printed. No, $21 million were printed per Bitcoin mined. So all of these numbers together just hint at what's coming in the future. Like, the hyper-Bitcoinization is a very real phenomenon, simply because of the fact that Bitcoins are finite and dollars are very much not finite. Also, these percentages here, cumulative rate of inflation, that is the official inflation numbers. Like, in reality, like, just during 2021, like, or I no, I'm I want to get the numbers correct here, but I think it's around 25% of all dollars that have ever existed that were printed from when the lockdown started to now. So every fourth dollar came into existence during the last couple of years. So the dollar is going to shit. It's hyperinflation in slow motion, but it is going to zero. Do with that what you will.
Yes, exactly. This historical perspective is really important for understanding why this all has to play out exactly the way it is. And there can be maybe short-term dampenings. There's definitely an argument that the halving cycle after this was written was a bit of a damp squib in terms of it didn't quite go to the heights that many people were thinking it could, at least after it popped off to, say, the 50,000 plus range for the first time. I think there was some expectation that it would go even further. And then of course, there are new factors in play when you get larger amounts of money in the system, more trading, more risk of large collapses, something like this. I'm not saying this to be a downer. I'm saying this to say that despite all of these external factors, there's always going to be this quantitative easing or counterfeiting, as you say, and there's always going to be this the limited supply of Bitcoin. And as more and more people understand that, adopt it, take their keys off of the exchanges, there's nowhere to hide anymore. Bitcoin is going to reflect the state of the monetary system, and it's going to expose the counterfeiting for what it is, the theft of purchasing power from everyone in the world. And then more and more people are going to adopt Bitcoin, and that's that.
Word, brother. I mean, the last sentence here says that at least 20% more US dollars in circulation. And it's already 25, and 10 years hasn't passed yet. So it's worse than I predicted here in the book, in terms of new dollars printed. No, and it's of course, for Bitcoin to still 10x every once in a while, in order to do that, it needs 10x more dollars to enter the system. So it gets harder and harder. But then again, there are so many factors in the other direction that make it easier and easier. One of them being Saylor and his likes buying up all the supply. Like, what matters here for the price is supply on demand. So it's the Bitcoins that are actually on the market that are interesting here. And the sat squeeze is real. It's all real. It's all coming, and it will be an avalanche, and jaws will drop. Faces will melt off. It's just inevitable.
I love when we're so bullish. Should we continue the discussion?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, let's look at the internet itself. Metcalfe's law states that the value of a communications network is proportional to the number of users on the network squared. Each new internet user is a potential new Bitcoin user, especially in those places on the planet where there's poor internet connectivity, because those places often have a weak local currency that Bitcoin functions as a hedge against. In 2008, 23% of the world's population had access to the internet, and in 2018, that number was 48%. In the developing world, the numbers were 14% in 2008 and 41% in 2018. The global numbers might not double again in the forthcoming 10 years, but it looks like they'll keep on rising. especially in developing countries where they might just double again. All of these indicators, less Bitcoin, more fiat money, more internet users, point toward a rising Bitcoin price, regardless of its current valuation. Bitcoin has risen in value extremely fast and has added, on average, an additional zero at the end of its price figure roughly every 3 years. Can it really keep doing so? Think about the underlying forces that drive the price up. Every single mobile device could potentially hold Bitcoin, yet only a select few do. When more and more people embrace the technology, the whole fear of missing out cycle starts again, and the price jumps up to the next plateau. Note also that every current Bitcoin user can do 3 things with his or her coins: sell them, lose them, or hold them. On top of this, nothing is stopping an existing Bitcoin user from acquiring more coins. Okay, yeah. Again, just adding to this bullish sat squeeze is real idea.
Yeah, and it's fun to read this and think about all the things that have happened since this was written. Back in May 2019, there was no El Salvador, there was no Costa Rica, there was no Kenya, there was no South African community, there was no Senegalian community, Ghanaian community, like all of these places in the world, Madeira, like where there is now a Bitcoin movement, a real one, and you can live off of sats in those places. And it's just growing and growing and growing. So it's, yeah, and there's no reason to think that train will stop anytime soon. Nothing stops that particular train.
I'm reminded of that the discussion we had last time about that essentially for the block subsidy to continue to be of the same value to miners, the price has to double every halving. And honestly, it just seems so impossible that it's not going to do so every 4 years, doubling every 4 years, right? And I think on top of all of this stuff, the adoption we have here, we might get doom and gloomy here sometimes in terms of some of these current issues that are affecting the Bitcoin community. But when we talk about it in these terms, I just can't help but be completely, completely bullish. And the idea that more and more people are coming into the fold here as well, I mean, this is why I support Bitcoin conferences all over the world. I think they're extremely important because they're there to act as a beacon for those who are curious, for those who want to know more, right? Physical Bitcoin spaces, like places that are owned by Bitcoiners that become this physical hub for what Bitcoin is doing in the world, a representation that people can just come in and see. Orange pilling businesses, all of these things that help to increase awareness and adoption. It's incredibly important. And we're not even close yet. Like the prevailing sentiment on the internet towards Bitcoin on normie social media absolutely still thinks that Bitcoin is a cult, a scam, a Ponzi scheme. And all of those people are going to see the difference over the next decade or two or 4 or 5 or 10. Well, some of them won't ever see it in their lifetimes, I guess. But Bitcoin is going to just simply continue to do what it does. And people who discover it and adopt it, figure it out, well, they're going to get the benefits of adopting sound money in a world of inflating fiat currency. And that's just it, right? That's the whole point.
Yeah, and even in a world where Bitcoin continues to have subpar spam filters, it's still orders of magnitude better than all fiat currencies that ever existed. Like it's important to stress that. I think that we're still insanely bullish. Like which is why we become so upset when we think that there's something in Bitcoin that might not be like aligned with the underlying values, and also why we react so heavily to Bitcoin conferences that prioritize size over signal to noise ratio and allow shitcoiners and spammers and scammers to get a platform to shill their scams. Because what I think is that so many people get burned by quote-unquote crypto, and they think Bitcoin is just another crypto, and therefore they get burned, they get scammed, and then they don't touch it. They don't come near Bitcoin for another 10 years because they had such a bad experience. And we don't want that. We want people to find the signal in the noise, which is why we're doing this thing.
It's 100% why we're doing this thing. Yeah. I think we should move on to the next paragraph.
Sure.
Bitcoin is an internet protocol that is very resistant to change. It showed an unprecedented example of this in late 2017, when all of the biggest companies in Bitcoin decided that they were going to implement the proposed segregated witness upgrade, and then hard fork to 2 megabyte blocks a couple of months later. Segregated witness, which most users wanted, was activated, but the network's users resisted the 2 megabyte block hard fork. This led to a lot of frustration among the proponents of the hard fork, and led to the creation of a copycat altcoin called Bitcoin Cash. The price of both tokens rose quickly in the aftermath of the fork, but in hindsight, the event was more of a train robbery than a Christmas gift, confusing at best. Segregated witness does not only free up block space, but it also allows for layer 2 scaling solutions to be built on top of Bitcoin, such as the Lightning Network. The Lightning Network allows for instant, completely anonymous, nearly free microtransactions that do not take up block space. And it is up and running right now. In addition to this, the number of Lightning Network transactions that can be carried out simultaneously is only limited by the bandwidth of the nodes. This makes the Lightning Network a future real competitor to Visa or MasterCard. Many other Layer 2 upgrades are in the works, but the core Bitcoin network functions the same way it always has with its inputs and outputs, its public and private keys, and so on. Yeah, so the Lightning Network, and it's always funny to look back at the times where Lightning, it was new, where there was a time in Bitcoin where Lightning didn't exist, everything was on-chain, and that's the era where you got these $10 transaction fee for buying a coffee or something like that. But now Lightning has completely fixed that.
Yeah, and I cannot emphasize enough the importance of studying the block size wars, which were never about block size to begin with, but about control. And there's a good book called the Block Size Wars by Jonathan Beyer or Beer, however you pronounce his name. Sorry, Jonathan. Which depicts the events from the inside and from someone who hadn't decided what side to take. Or that's sort of what I feel when reading the book. I think the book tries to be neutral, but I don't think there was a neutral. This was a neutral war. It was an attempt at overthrowing Bitcoin and becoming giving all the power to the miners and to the bigger companies. Like BitPay was a big thing. Now, where there was once BitPay, there is now BTC Pay server, which is much more decentralized and open source and whatnot, and it's not run by one single entity anymore. And where there was, back in the day, where there was local Bitcoins, there is now Vexel, for instance, which is peer-to-peer instead of stored on centralized servers. So the network and its on and off ramps and its infrastructure is evolving around all the centralization attempts, and I just love to see it. It's also for those who don't know, segregated witness as a soft fork, almost all of the community thought that was impossible, or all the developers thought that this required a hard fork, but one guy came up with a solution, and that was Luke Dasher, and he single-handedly saved Bitcoin from this from this attempt at capture. From a certain point of view. Then again, segregated witness came with some unwanted side effects. We figured out that later because there's a witness discount, which meant that spammers could put more shit in that particular part of the transaction data. But still, the big thing, this is where my conviction was like ironclad, because I saw all of I saw this attempt. I witnessed it all play out the way it did, and the users won over this ginormous powers that would have easily taken over anything else. But it just didn't work in Bitcoin because Bitcoiners stayed vigilant and ran their nodes and signaled that they wouldn't do this stupid hard fork. A hard fork that would have set a precedent for increasing the block size even more in the future, which would have led to a higher cost to firing up a node, a higher cost to running a node, and therefore, in the end, it would have killed Bitcoin's decentralization because Bitcoin would just be like any other shitcoin, like Ethereum that has five nodes in total that are all run by the same entity. Doesn't work. The nodes need to be in charge, otherwise it's not Bitcoin anymore. So yeah, a super important event, and I urge everyone to go and study it and see what happened there.
Yeah, the importance of remaining vigilant is always there. As in the epic poem, the Voluspá, which tells the tale of the world of Norse mythology that gets destroyed by Ragnarok. After the world is remade and everything appears to be absolutely perfect, there is still the snake lurking in the background. You can't ever get rid of the need for vigilance. And that's important here. And even amongst our bullishness, our ultra bullishness, we have to stay vigilant. And I do believe that we emphasize that too. Sometimes we overemphasize the need for vigilance to a certain extent here, but that's because this stuff is so important. I didn't get involved with Bitcoin until after the block size war, so I've always lived in a world where Lightning exists, and in a world where this whole saga had played out. And to a certain extent, I think a lot of people needed to have this stuff sorted out, right? Lightning has been a major thing for adoption, right? Without Lightning, you can't really pay for stuff with Bitcoin. It's sort of a hobby. Like the transaction fees alone make it impractical for day-to-day purchases. But Lightning completely solves that. The cost of some Lightning transactions is actually zero if you're going from one custodial Lightning wallet to the same custodial Lightning wallet. But anyway, it's still really major for Bitcoin adoption. So this stuff has all happened. And I think the voices of those who are here for the block size wars are incredibly important because, I mean, there's no one really talking about making such massive changes to Bitcoin that they would actually result in a hard fork currently, or that they would do things that would change the economic conditions of Bitcoin absolutely drastically. Because the thing is, segregated witness and Taproot, the next upgrade in this chain basically that isn't talked about here in the book, they had unintended consequences which have basically enabled the proliferation of spam on Bitcoin. And so is it a okay trade-off to get the Lightning network but also have spam on Bitcoin? Honestly, on balance, probably yes, especially if the spam can be outcompeted, but it still means that we have to be incredibly careful about Bitcoin and we have to be vigilant and defend what we have.
Yeah, and I mean, the witness discount was put there for a reason, because we wanted people to use segregated witness, but it came with an unforeseen side effect. Still, one might ask, why don't we just soft fork it again and make it different? But this is the thing. Once a change once Bitcoin has changed, you can't really go back. It's very unwise to like retract something that the network already decided was a good idea. So you have to work with what you have, which is mostly a feature and not a bug. Even with the unintended consequences, like Bitcoin's resistance to change is absolutely crucial for it to function at all.
Yes, absolutely crucial. So I think we should cover the last paragraph and then summarize, basically.
That's a short chapter, this.
A bit short, but that's okay. It's a good summarizer. Will some other token ever replace Bitcoin, then? After all, more efficient protocols are out there. Short answer, no. This has been mentioned several times before in this book, but it can't be stressed enough. scarcity on the internet was a one-time discovery. It was a one-time invention, and it cannot be repeated because resistance to replicability is the invention. Bitcoin's history and unique position are what makes it truly scarce and resistant to change. And these first 10 years will not repeat themselves for any alternative token. There is still a lot of confusion about what Bitcoin is, and the idea of sound money on the internet is a hard concept to grasp since humans haven't ever encountered absolute scarcity before. The best path forward for any person is arguably to educate him or herself and others about the invention and what it means. Time will tell whether your sources were true or false, and it is unlikely that Bitcoin will achieve mass adoption in the next couple of years. Still, the infrastructure is in place, and the interfaces of its surrounding software, like wallets, are getting more and more user-friendly every day. Remember, the iPhone was first introduced to the world in 2007, and smartphones had enormous corporate marketing to help them succeed all along the way. Bitcoin grows organically. Let it breathe and watch it evolve. But whatever you do, don't miss the opportunity and acquire some while you still can at this discounted price. Finn.
Yeah, that was Sovereignty Through Mathematics. I thought of one point that I missed from the last paragraph. Taproot was not a thing when this was written.
No, exactly. I mentioned that. Yeah.
No, what was the price on in May 2019? Well, June 26, 2019, it comes up here fast, and it was around between $11,000 and $13,000. So roughly a tenth of what it is right now. So Bitcoin has 10x since this book was published, because it was published earlier than June. So yeah, that's kind of... fascinating, isn't it? So anyone who read this and followed this advice and just held on to their stack is now 10 times richer.
Or no times richer because they still have the same amount of Bitcoin.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in dollar terms, they're 10 times richer, but that is slightly skewed. So the real number in purchasing power terms is more like 7 times richer.
Yeah, and the purchasing power is what matters, but... Yeah, overall though, hey, this point of will anything else replace Bitcoin? I mean, this is one of the important things, right? Is that this is only being done once. All of the altcoins in the world can never replicate what Bitcoin has done. Not really. The point about that, say, there are more efficient protocols. I mean, my first thought there is efficient in what terms, but yeah. there are some that pretend that they have all these like transactions per second and like low fees and this and that, but they all sacrifice decentralization for whatever features they have, and then we come down to that the only thing that really needs a blockchain is an immutable ledger that tracks ownership, and you only need one of those.
So. Yeah, but this was written in a time where Bitcoin maximalism, I don't think I referred to it early in the book, right? Is the word Bitcoin maximalism in here somewhere?
I think so,
but it was just coined by Vitalik Buterin. So the crusadeness of Bitcoin maximalism wasn't the same here, but the point with that it can't have a successor is very simple. Like if there's ever a successor to Bitcoin and another finite coin, then there's nothing prevents that from yet a new coin to flip that coin that flipped Bitcoin. And it can do so over and over again. So like the whole point is this finite supply. That's absolutely the thing that makes Bitcoin different and that makes Bitcoin valuable. And any copy of that, at best, it's shooting itself in the foot. Because if you can copy it, then there's no point to the original thing. Like the only thing that makes the SAT different than everything else is this finiteness. So it's super simple. Finite amount of Bitcoins and an infinite amount of shitcoins. At least a potential infinite amount. It's just a copy, copy of a copy. And great Nine Inch Nails song, by the way. We've seen it with people who fell for the NFT scams a couple of years back, and there was like rare monkey JPEGs issued on one coin, and all of a sudden the scammer decides to issue the same set of monkey JPEGs on another shitcoin. I mean, all of this stuff, there's no finiteness to it. And the only thing that is finite on the internet is the Satoshi. And the reason that it is because it's not really on the internet, but in our heads. We're going to deep dive into that in subsequent books here.
Yeah, I mean, I think my last thoughts on this chapter are basically that the predictions might not have been, you know, spot on true, or were there even really any concrete predictions? I guess sort of not. The main thing that holds true is that, yeah, take the opportunity to acquire some Bitcoin and educate others about it. And that has held true, absolutely. And the historical perspective, I think, is fantastic. It's a good reminder for people. And I think there will be book chapters written about this moment in time, all the moments in time that are important. It's a good snapshot. This book is a fantastic snapshot of the thinking going around in Bitcoin in 2019, and the chapters all are pretty much timeless in terms of the thinking. And of course, some ideas have evolved and being fleshed out differently in other books. But overall, this whole chapter, this whole future looking view has held true. So I think that's my thoughts about Sovereignty Through Mathematics. A very good book, and certainly a good start to thinking about Bitcoin.
Thanks a lot for those kind words. I think if there's any prediction here, is in one of the starting paragraphs of this chapter, where it's more of a like logical conclusion than a prediction, that there is no reason that Bitcoin wouldn't 10x in the upcoming decade, and it has already 10x'd 6 years later in dollar terms, at least. So it all did play out. And Sovereignty Through Mathematics is my first proper Bitcoin book, and I'm still very proud of it, and happy that we got the chance to do it this way. We'll do another episode of this Academy course where we'll wrap things up and do a little. Yeah, I can't find a better word than wrap up.
recap
of the book. That's the word. Yeah. So looking forward to that last episode of this course too. The next course on my next book, Bitcoin Independence Reimagined, we have a planned premiere date for that, and that is on no other day but Bitcoin Infinity Day on the 21st of August. So looking forward to that one too. Make sure you sign up for it if you haven't already.
Yes, absolutely. Hey, so I think with that, we can just remind our listeners about our wonderful sponsors. First of all, Plan B Network, fantastic Bitcoin educational effort and resource that we're thrilled to be a part of. Happy to be adding our voices to what's going on over at Plan B. So go to planb.network to check out everything they have, all of these educational resources. They have courses themselves. They have the free versions the old versions of courses available for free. So you can check that all out if you want to see some more educational resources for yourself, or you think something might be useful for your friends and family. No coiners, check that out. We know we're a little bit of a deeper down the rabbit hole kind of stop here, but planb.network can fill that gap for you, absolutely.
Yes, and I'll be giving a lecture on praxeology in Lugano here. Yeah, when this is released, it will be next week. So looking forward to that a lot, and looking forward to the collaboration with Plan B Network in the future. There's a lot of things, good things coming there. Also, we'd like to mention our favorite hardware wallet, BitBox, which is a lovely little device that looks like a USB stick, but it's really a very based Bitcoin wallet.
Yes, exactly. They don't compromise on security. But they maintain being easy to use. It's Swiss designed. Can't say enough good things about BitBox. Go to bitbox.swiss/infinity for all your hardware wallet needs. Well, and I think with that, this has been Sovereignty Through Mathematics. The years ahead, great chapter, very bullish. So anything else to add, Knut?
No, if you watch this live, thank you. And see you in the next one.
This has been the Bitcoin Infinity Academy. Thanks for listening.